Hey, beautiful. Welcome to Are You There, Midlife? It's me, Monica. I'm your host, Monica Topetti, holistic coach and hormone imbalance survivor. Yay! And on this podcast, I share stories, science, and proven strategies to help you navigate perimenopause and menopause without doctors, drugs, or divorce. On today's episode, I have a very special guest. He is the yin to my yang, the chocolate to my peanut butter, my best friend and husband for nearly 26 years. Say hello, honey.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rick. Happy to be here. Thanks for the great introduction, honey.
Well, together we are kicking off a special series. I'm calling it the His and Hers Day Thursday series on love and hormones. Specifically, how perimenopause and menopause may be affecting your marriage. Every other week during April and May, Rick and I are going to be diving into a different hormone topic and give you both the female and male perspective. Because ladies, we're not going through this hormonal shift all by ourselves. Our partners may not know what a hot flash feels like, but they most definitely feel the repercussions when we're getting one. Am I right? So grab a notebook and a glass of your favorite beverage, because we're about to get into how to explain perimenopause to a man and what you wish your partner would understand. Let's do it. Welcome to Are You There, Midlife? It's me, Monica. Hi, I'm Monica Topetti, wife, mom, health coach, and hormone imbalance survivor. And I'm on a mission to help women in midlife balance hormones naturally without drugs, doctors, or divorce. Are you tired of dealing with heavy, painful periods that look like a crime scene? Are you sick of struggling with anxiety, fatigue, or brain fog that... What was I just saying? Are you frustrated doing all the things to lose weight, but still packing on pounds faster than a real housewife changes Birkins? Girl, you are in the right place. Join me each week as I spill the tea on what to expect in perimenopause and beyond. From IBS to insomnia, bloating to funky body odor, I'll unpack all the weird stuff happening inside our midlife bodies. Plus, give you the latest science and holistic solutions to manage it all. So ditch the Spanx and hop on board the Hot Mess Express. Let's do this. Hey friends, welcome back to the show. So I want to start today's conversation by acknowledging the elephant in the room. The big D, divorce. Yeah, there is a reason why I mention it in the tagline of my podcast. Because divorce in midlife is definitely a thing. And in fact, it's becoming an increasingly more frequent thing. I actually just read a statistic recently that said the divorce rate for couples over age 55 has doubled since 1990. Isn't that crazy?
Wow, that's unbelievable. Can't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that after a certain period of time being together, like you kind of... You know what you've got and you've kind of settled in a rhythm, but yeah. And to be honest with you, the reasons why divorce is so prevalent in midlife was even a bigger shocker. What, just off the top of your head, what would you think, you know, one or a couple of the reasons might be?
I think probably finances. I mean, I would put that at probably up at the top of the list, maybe.
From a yeah, that's definitely stressful when you don't have money. That's for sure. But actually, according to this study that I read, the number one reason, or one of the number one reasons, is communication, followed by lack of emotional support, followed by unresolved lingering conflicts. Oh boy. And then lastly, infidelity or emotional affairs. And honestly, you know, I think all of these factors really kind of go back to communication, or maybe a lack of communication. Because I know that if I'm not feeling seen and heard, I'm hurt. And if you're going around feeling hurt, you can start like dragging up stuff from the past, especially if you've been married for a while, or even looking for support elsewhere. And this applies to both husbands and wives.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think communication is so huge, and it's an ongoing, everyday journey together.
Yeah, especially when you're dealing with hormones. Okay, so we're going to get into this, but before we start, ladies, I want to offer this suggestion. Go ahead, get comfy, put on your ear pods, put on your slippers, whatever it is that you need to do to feel like you're in a good space. And I want you to listen to this entire episode of the podcast by yourself first. Okay? Then, after the podcast is over, I want you to pick a date and time this week when both you and your partner can schedule some time alone. And I want you to listen to this episode together, uninterrupted. You can even pause it and use it as a conversation starter, you know, as you have a discussion about perimenopause and menopause. And, you know, Rick and I actually do this all of the time. We are huge, huge reality TV junkies. And so we'll watch like relationship shows like Love is Blind or Summer House. And we'll actually pause the TV and ask each other questions. And we kind of use it like relationship therapy. So go ahead and use this podcast for that same purpose, just to open up a dialogue if that's an issue for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely helped us for sure with the shows and being able to communicate. We continue to do it today.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Absolutely. Okay, so Rick, let's go all the way back to the beginning. The year was 2014. Yeah. I was, I think, about, 44. And that's the time when I started to deal with perimenopause and symptoms of my hormonal imbalance. Asking you, when you recall that time, what did you notice in terms of like changes in me or just the way that I was relating to you?
I think it was interesting time for me because you would be quick to react to things and snap. And a couple of things come to mind. I mean, I remember one time you asked me to go to the store and just simply pick up items, which I would do all the time, whatever we need to do. Mm-hmm. And on this particular occasion, I came home and I forgot the coconut oil and you just launched on me like a rocket. And I remember looking at you like, where did my wife go? What's going on? And, you know, I remember the time when at the time you were on Wellbutrin, which would, you know, seeing you, it would help you with your anxiety and all of this. And it wasn't helping you because you were launching on me. So it was very frustrating.
Yeah. That's so true. And that's, you know, anxiety, mood swings, irritability, all of those emotional issues. That is one of the first signs of perimenopause. And probably about 6 months prior to my symptoms really starting to escalate, I actually went into the doctor and got on Wellbutrin. How many of you ladies out there, you can raise your hands in your homes, are on a antidepressant or anti-anxiety medication or your doctor has prescribed you one? Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, that's a whole other topic for a whole other show. But suffice it to say that it wasn't a, you know, an emotional issue as much as it was a hormonal issue that I was dealing with. And so my anti-anxiety medication was no longer working. So that was a big sign to me that something else was going on. Now, during this time, I was dealing with early onset symptoms. Now, every woman experiences perimenopause differently. I'm going to go into more into this in future episodes, but, you know, there's 34 documented symptoms of perimenopause. Some lists have, you know, over 50. And so we're all going to be experiencing it differently. Or at least the 75% of us that do experience hormonal symptoms. The other 25% are just blessed, I guess. But I was dealing with a couple things. One, rapid weight gain. That's something that a lot of my clients experience for many reasons, having to do with the fluctuating hormones during perimenopause. And then I was also dealing with digestive issues. And my digestive issues were, I was experiencing a lot of pain in my stomach, and it got to be where like anything I ate caused me like this pain in my stomach. And, And yet I was still gaining weight. And of course I was still eating, but it made me pretty miserable. And this led to me to start canceling a lot of plans that we had with friends and social events. Do you remember back during that time and kind of how you felt about what was going on?
Yeah, I can remember like it was yesterday. It was very frustrating. I mean, I was working hard and I was looking forward to time with friends and doing things. And you started canceling things left and right. And it was like hands in the air. My friends were wondering what's going on. And I definitely started to resent you. And I know it had an effect on our marriage at the time.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Resentment. Isn't that one of the causes of divorce? Like lingering feelings of unresolved conflicts. So I think we've worked that out now. But yeah, it definitely didn't help our marriage, right? So because, you know, like I said before, perimenopause, menopause, not just affecting you. It's affecting you and everyone that lives in your household, especially your partner, right? So it's important to understand kind of what's going on in the mind of our husband and husbands, what's going on in the bodies of our wives, so we can kind of really meet at the middle and approach this issue as a team. So that's really what we're trying to do here today as we peel back the layers on my hormonal hell and our hormonal journey together, because it really is a journey together. Okay, so I'm canceling events, I'm not fitting into my clothes, I'm having stomach issues. Was there one particular incident, you know, outside of the coconut oil incident of 2014, was there a particular incident or aha moment during those early months where you were just like, wow, this is real?
Yeah, most definitely. I think the one that stands out for me was when we had to rush you to urgent care. And it was like the middle of the night. Our daughter at the time was 13 and freaking out. I was freaking out, but I knew that I had to stay calm. I had to be there for her, but I had to be there for you. And I had all this swirl of emotions going on. And
why did we go to the urgent care?
Because you were having heart palpitations, right? And your heart was fluttering, which was really freaking me out, right, as your husband, because I didn't know what to do. And yeah, I was like so scared.
Yeah, I literally thought I was having a heart attack. I've never been so scared. And so, yeah, I remember that it was like the middle of the night. And you know, I went to the urgent care, they hooked me up to an EKG, they did a bunch of tests. And they came back and they said, you know, good news, you're fine. And they sent me home with Xanax. Like, yeah, I was like, I'm already on Wellbutrin. Now you're giving me Xanax. I was like, yeah, this can't go on. I can't keep dealing with this. So after that incident, it was then that I made an appointment with our primary care doctor. And I went in, I saw him, great guy. He listened to me. He ordered a complete blood panel. He wanted to, you know, rule out anything going on, you know, more serious. And then he also included a test for my hormone levels. And I remember telling you that I was so excited, yeah, because I thought finally we were going to get, you know, some answers, because I couldn't keep going on like that. Except we didn't get any answers because all of the tests came back normal.
Yeah.
Even though I felt nothing but normal. And I remember how defeated I felt at the time. I just like, beside myself. I didn't know where to turn. What did you think when we got back those tests and they said that everything was normal?
I think there was a lot of whirl of emotions going on at the time, because I'm thinking about, okay, she just had the whole heart thing going on, which scared me. Now we're going to see the doctor, and we've been with this doctor for a long time. So, okay, now is it psychosomatic? What's going on? And I, at that point, again, I felt helpless because I wanted to fix the problem. And I knew at the time I was working a lot of hours. We had closed a business not too far in the distant past. You know, our moms had been living with us. So I felt, yeah, there might have been some things causing it. But yeah, hands in the air.
Yeah, that's, you know, you bring up a really good point, because we did have both our moms living with us at one point for different reasons. We had just closed our business of, you know, 5-6 years. We were in the middle of or recovering from, you know, a recession. And studies show that a high level of stress or chronic stress, plus all of the hormonal fluctuations, you know, we're experiencing in perimenopause and menopause is really one of the very biggest contributors to a hormonal imbalance. And, if we know anything about hormones, we know that it's our adrenals and cortisol that rule the hormone world. And so when they're out of whack, you are out of whack. And, you know, midlife in general, it can be a very stressful period of time. Not just bad stress, right? You know, it can be challenging in terms of, you know, maybe you've got kids that are teenagers causing you havoc, or you're trying to, you know, get them into college, or, you know, be able to afford their college, or maybe you're dealing with empty nest pains, trying to decide, you know, do you want to go back to work? Do you want to, you know, change careers? Do you want to go back to school? But then we can also be dealing with things like caregiving for a, you know, an aging parent. Or, you know, it's kind of this time of, you know, in our life where we start to experience death of maybe friends, you know, or relatives. It can also be good things like, you know, you decide you're going to sell your house and, you know, move into something smaller because you're an empty nester. Or maybe it's time for a change and you decide to move across country. Or, you know, it could be good things as well. But all of those are stressors, right? They put stress on you. Marital issues, you know, everything that you can think of during this period of time. You know, they don't call us the sandwich generation for nothing. We're caring, you know, for kids still. Even if they're young adults, we're still caring for them. A lot of them are still on our bankroll. And and then we're dealing with, you know, parents. And we might be helping to care financially, not just, you know, physically, but financially for their well-being as well. You know, if they've got some issues later in life. So chronic stress is not a joke. It's definitely a contributor, but it's not necessarily the answer. It's not necessarily the root cause of these symptoms. It's more of a contributor of your hormones, you know, really becoming out of whack. And, you know, speaking of being out of whack, I remember my aha moment, or my, I don't know, say rock bottom moment, really, was having a total meltdown in the front seat of our car in the doctor's office parking lot. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. Like yesterday.
I don't know. I think it was after one of my many follow-up visits trying to figure out what the heck was going on with me. I felt like I was losing my mind. I had no answers. And I'm one of those, like, I'm kind of like a dude. I'm like a fix-it kind of person. And so this I couldn't figure out. This I couldn't fix. And I couldn't keep it together anymore. I'm not a huge crier, but I'd like lost it. And do you remember that? What was going through? Do you remember what was going through your mind during that whole situation?
Yeah. I mean, it just the same. I couldn't fix it. I was frustrated. I was seeing all these things unfolding in your personality and how you were acting and just the anxiety and just, you know, acting out. And I felt helpless, and I didn't know what to do, and I wanted to be there for you, and it was hard. Mm-hmm. And man, I can't even put words to it. It was just a very tough time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I remember you not being extremely communicative during our conversations. Either one, because you were afraid I was going to like snap at you if you said the wrong thing. But I also think it's kind of a manly response if you don't know kind of how to fix the problem and you don't really have any answers. You don't really know from a communications perspective where to go. And so a lot of times I would just like be looking at you wanting some kind of recognition or support, and you were, you know, silent. And that silent was like, you know, silence was deafening to me, because you're my person, you're my support person, and I didn't expect for you to understand what I was going through, but in some way, shape, or form, I hoped that you could somehow help me. And, you know, you were just as perplexed as I was, and as was our doctor, you know, at the time. And through that whole, you know, situation, as I look back, I think there were some things that you probably needed from me to kind of help you handle the situation better. And I think there were some things that I kind of needed from you to handle the situation better, especially in terms of like communication. And that's what I really want to share and help with, you know, all the ladies and guys listening to today, kind of give you some tips about what not to do when you're going through this, and then what some of the things that you can do to help. So if you could like wave a magic wand and go back in time, what's one thing you wished either you would have told me sooner, or that I would have told you sooner to help our communication?
Well, I think the first thing I would have said is I'm not a mind reader, you know, don't hate me. I want to be there. And I think if I look back on it, it would be, you know, tell me what you need from me in this conversation. How can I be there for you? Because I want to support you. And, you know, I think I look at that and I've learned this over the years, you know, should I leave you alone? Do you want to vent? And I just listen. Okay. I'm going to be there. Or do you need me to solve the problem? And I think for men, sometimes we don't know what we don't know, you know? And I think sometimes if you feel like crap, well then, you know, okay, you feel like crap, tell me what you're feeling. And that way, at least I know you're not mad at me, so we can work together to solve this together. It's going to get you through this. And I think from a man's perspective, that would be one thing I would say to my younger self and to any man out there going through this with his wife and trying to figure it out.
Yeah, that's true. Because I can see, you know, when I was feeling horrible and I was just so irritable and aggravated and snapping at you, it would be, you know, putting myself in your shoes at the time, I can see how you might have felt that I like was mad at you or hated you or whatever, when reality it was just I felt horrible. And maybe I was a little angry that you couldn't solve the problem secretly.
Sure.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things that I think as a woman being in that situation, I know at least I would have liked to have heard. And the first thing that I want to hear is you believe me, especially if you're getting back test results that say everything's fine. And, you know, I did have inclinations that you at one point in time were like, is this all in your head? Because all the tests are coming back normal. So just you telling me, you know what, Monica, I believe you. I might not be able to feel what you're feeling, but if you're telling me you feel like this, I believe you. So that would at least have me, you know, not feel like I was losing my mind and thinking I was crazy. I also think I would want you, or I would have wanted you to like reassure me more. And this is different for every woman, but in my particular situation with the heart palpitations and everything and the stomach pain, I was really scared. And so, you know, as my husband, I just wanted you to reassure me, tell me it was going to be okay, that we would, you know, figure out a solution. I think reassurance is the second thing. And then third, that this wasn't just my issue, that, you know, we are a team and we've been a team. That's how we, you know, run our marriage. We don't really have necessarily traditional gender roles. We are partners, you know, we were partners in raising our daughter, and, you know, sometimes you make dinner and you were, you know, changing diapers and I was building furniture, and that's just, you know, that's just the way it works in our marriage. But, you know, I really felt alone sometimes, and for you to tell me, you know what, we're a team, we're going to figure this out together, just like we've approached everything else in our marriage, would have been really, really helpful. And then lastly, I think showing up. So what I mean by that is, you know, words are great. And actually, one of my love languages is words of affirmation. So the more things that you can tell me, the more that I just scoop that up and feel, you know, feel the love. But at the same time, putting action behind your words. And I'm not saying that you didn't do this, but I know a lot of men can, you know, say all the right things and then life gets in the way. And they realize that maybe a solution is actually going to involve a lifestyle change, and a lifestyle change not just for their partner, but for their household, you know? And so putting actions behind your words, you know, hey, honey, you know, do you want us to, you know, book a appointment with, you know, an endocrinologist and, you know, might involve being, you know, paying out of pocket for tests or something like that, a deeper dive into hormones, but, you know, let's do that. Or, you know, hey, honey, you know, you mentioned a couple supplements that you wanted to, you know, buy. Let's go shopping for those. Or, you know, hey, honey, I know you're switching your diet, or, you know, you're trying some new recipes. Let's cook dinner together on, you know, a Saturday or Sunday when I don't, you know, have work the next day. Or, you know, let's talk about, you know, this health coach that you found that can, you know, help you with your hormones. And let's talk about what that looks like financially. And, you know, if this is a good investment for us. It's like putting actions behind your words so that it's not just, okay, I'm here to support you. And then when it comes down to it, you know, your wife is kind of left on her own.
Yeah. I mean, I look back on that and it's like, if I knew then what I know now, which I've learned over the years, being present in that conversation and letting you know I'm here and we're going to do this together. We're going to figure out a plan, letting you know I do believe you. I'm here to support you. Mm-hmm. And I think those are the X factors that all husbands need to be there. Like, it's not about, oh my gosh, this is affecting my life, my work. It's actually a situation your wife's going through. And if we can work on this together, you know, make dinner, do little things along the way, mm-hmm. it's going to lighten the load of what she's going through and get you to the other side.
Yeah. Happy wife, happy life. Okay. So wrapping up today's conversation, I want to give couples three communication tips that really helped us navigate some difficult dialogue. So we've kind of talked about some things we wish we kind of would have done and things that we've learned throughout this 10-year journey that we've been on together. But here's some three specific tips and some examples. So ladies, guys, write these down. Tip number one is active listening. Now, ladies, this is for you. When you want to pick a time and a place to have a conversation, make sure you pick a time and a place that works for your husband. And what I mean by this is men's brains are different. No offense, honey, but men cannot multitask like we can, right? The TV needs to be off, not mute, not on mute while ESPN plays in the background. The TV needs to be off. You know, if you've got kids like teens or something like at home, they need to be out of the house, or you need to be, you know, upstairs behind closed doors in your bedroom having this discussion, or, you know, off campus at a restaurant over a glass of wine, whatever works for you. Okay. But specifically, if your man has been working all day, just like you have, right? But if he's been working all day and he comes home, he's typically going to need some time to decompress. Maybe he goes into his man cave and goes and plays video games. Maybe he just, you know, sits in front of ESPN with, you know, a beer or a sparkling water, whatever. But that time is precious because he needs to reboot his computer. Otherwise, you might as well just talk to the wall. So saying, hey, honey, I want to talk to you the minute he walks in the door is probably the very first time, very worst time to try and get to talk to him. He is not going to hear anything that you are saying. Now, sometimes, you know, men have different schedules, and so you're, you know, you got to find what works for you. But this is especially important for being able to have a man's undivided attention.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally relate back to this. I mean, because I look at our world, and in my job, I have a long commute. So I have a lot of time to decompress. I can listen to some music, call my mom, call a friend. But I know when I come in the door, we kind of have a routine where it's like, okay, let me get myself settled in. Maybe it's a few minutes, a half hour, whatever, and then have a conversation. And I think one thing I've learned over the years is to be present, because I know there was times of like, okay, let's talk. There's my phone in my hand, or I'm looking at my watch, where now, you know, it's taken me years to figure it out, but put my watch down, put my phone down, and be here to have this conversation, because that's going to help us going forward in that moment.
Yes. And nothing pisses off a hormonal woman more than when she's trying to tell you how she feels, you're looking at your watch or your phone. Like, that goes back to the D word. Like, those are grounds, baby. Okay, so we've got the first tip, which was active listening. And in terms of active listening, there's a kind of a second part to that. And that's after we've picked a good time to talk, you've got your man's undivided attention, you start talking, and crickets. Ladies, have you ever tried to have a conversation with your man about your feelings, and he's just like staring back at you, not talking, not responding, nothing? That gets, I don't know about you, but that gets me so irritated, because I'm like, this is a conversation, not a monologue. So how does active listening help in this specific situation, Rick? Like, when we're talking about menopause, perimenopause, a lady's trying to explain to her man how she's feeling, what she's going through. Give an example of that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess one thing that I've learned over the years is, you know, one way is not knowing what to say was to repeat back to you what you just said. You know, so what I'm hearing you say is, you know, whether or not you're frustrated with the scale going up and you don't know why. But in that moment, I'm letting you know that, A, I'm showing you I'm listening as a husband,
True. Number one. Yeah.
And it also, I think, lays a foundation to show that we're on the same page together going forward. That's a key right there, I think.
Yeah, because sometimes, you know, I say something and you might hear it differently, or vice versa. So if we're saying it back to each other, you know, you're saying, so what I'm hearing you say is you want to rip my face off. And I'm like, no, what I'm really saying is I'm so hormonal right now that I want to rip anybody's face off. It has nothing to do with you. I love you, but I just like, I hate people right now. So I think that's important to really clarify, because that's how feelings get hurt. Just miscommunication, misunderstanding. So making sure that your communication is being understood clearly, that your intention is being understood, is like, goes a long, long way, I think, in just helping the process. Okay. So that brings us to tip number two, ladies and gents. Tip number two is empathic listening. Empathic listening. So the definition of empathic listening is, quote, making an emotional connection with the other person and finding similarities between their experience and your own, so you can give a more heartfelt response. Can you think of a good example of empathic listening?
Absolutely, Monica. Yeah, for sure. I mean, one thing I can think about in connecting it, like, I'm not losing weight, you're dealing with that frustration. I could sit here and say, I used to run 45 minutes on the treadmill, now my knee hurts, I can only do 15 minutes. And it's so frustrating because I can't do that. Or as a man, you have the little blue pill, like, okay, but you know, what if, you know, for whatever you need it for, but let's say
all know what you need it for.
Well, yeah, true, honey. That's true as we speak to this. But what if there wasn't a blue pill, the frustration that a man would feel and deal with? So right. I think we need to connect the dots to better us understand our wives and our spouses, what they're going through, by relating it to what we might be going through. And that's something I've learned over the years.
Right, right. So, you know, maybe I used to be able to eat anything I want, and now I'm getting this, like, you know, gut. Or maybe I used to be able to run 45 minutes, and now after about 20 minutes, I feel like a pain in my knee. Or here's another one. How about having to get up and go to the bathroom 5 times during the middle of the night, because your prostate is changing, right? So guys might not be able to relate to, like, our hot flashes and specific, you know, symptoms, fatigue, and all the different things that we're feeling, but they are aging as well. Their body is transitioning, and there are some, you know, things that they can relate to in terms of their body's changing and symptoms of aging. Okay, so that was number two, empathic listening. And now I want to talk about the last tip, which is nonverbal communication. Write that down, ladies and guys. Nonverbal communication. Oh, yeah, nonverbal communication. Actually, I was kind of shocked when I read that something like 70 to 90% of all communication is nonverbal. Isn't that crazy?
Wow. I wouldn't have thought the number would be that high, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I don't know about that. I mean, that obviously, there's scientists doing their studies, but...
I guess so.
I know nonverbal communication is super, super powerful because I vividly remember a conversation that we had early on about what was kind of going on with me. And you were actually, you know, kind of saying a lot of the things that I wanted to hear, but... Your arms were folded the entire time. I remember that. And so it's like your words were saying, I'm here for you. And your arms were saying, oh my God, I don't want to be dealing with this again. And I don't know. It was, for me, I think it was a trigger. I felt like I was a little girl, like talking to my dad, or, you know, a couple of times I was, you know, in the principal's office getting yelled at for something. And it put me in this really defensive position. And I was just super, super irritated. So not only was I irritated because of my hormones, but then you know, nonverbally communicating to me, or at least my interpretation of your nonverbal communication, which was, I don't care. Are we done with this? Is this over yet? Are you finishing up soon? Just sent me through the roof.
Yeah, I think if I look back in time at the things I used to say and do, it would, like if I knew then what I know now, and I think over the years I've become a little more self-aware. Not to say I don't have my moments, but like being present all the way around.
For sure, for sure. So why don't you share some of the ways that guys can non-verbally reassure their wives or girlfriends to communicate that you're dialed in during a conversation?
Well, the first thing I would start with would be eye contact. Like, I'm there. I'm not looking at my phone, checking the score in the game. I'm here. I'm present. Because if I'm looking away, like, do you care if I'm not there? I think you touched on it, you know, facial expressions. If I'm kind of like a deadpan look, like, okay, is she done yet? Because the game's already starting. Then you're going to sense that too. And then, yes, and I've been guilty of it, you know, the body language things. I know there's been times where the arms are crossed and I'm sending you a message. I mean, listen to these statistics. I can see where that defensive mode then comes in, you know. And I think the little things, based on wherever you're at, you know, letting your wife know that you're there for her. And it could be as simple as a touch, you know, holding a hand, or I'm here, whether or not we're sitting at the table or we're on the couch. Just that moment, I'm here, and little things like that to be present, you know.
Yeah, I think touch is a good one because it's so powerful, but I also think touch is kind of a touchy subject because sometimes women, when they're dealing with all these hormonal issues, just don't want to be touched.
Yeah.
I know I had those moments.
Yeah.
And so I think that, like, let's say you're in a conversation, you're sitting across from each other and your wife is, you know, or your partner is getting really emotional and she's tearing up, and just standing up and, like, you know, getting a Kleenex and standing up and sitting next to her and showing that you're there for her, and then letting her take the lead. Like, is she grabbing your hand? Is she crying on your shoulder? You know, is she like leaning into you? And then you can kind of take the lead from her, or even asking, you know, can I give you a hug right now? Or do you want a hug? Or, you know, something like that. And just kind of feeling her out, because she loves you, but you don't know how she's feeling inside.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's like, what do you need from me in this moment? I'm here and I'm going to be there for you.
Totally. Totally. Love it. Love it. Okay. So we know that navigating perimenopause and menopause can definitely be a hormonal roller coaster. We've kind of talked a little bit about that today. So in the next episode of this series, Rick and I are going to be diving into how to support your partner emotionally through this time. Lots and lots of juicy stuff in that episode to come. In the meantime, do you have a question you'd like Rick and me to answer on the podcast? All you got to do is click the link in the show notes that says record a question. That'll give you an opportunity to leave up to a 90-second message on SpeakPipe. It can be totally anonymous. You don't have to leave your names if you don't want to. And we will make sure to at least address the question in a future episode. If not, make it the topic for an episode. So until next time, Rick, do you have one final tip that you can give our guys?
You know what? I'd say it's simply this. It's not you. It's her hormones. There's definitely a path through it. You just have to work together to get there.
Amen. Amen. Okay. And then one final tip for the ladies. Can you cut your guy a little slack? I know. You know, I really believe your man loves you, but men, as we've discussed, are built a little differently. They really are conditioned genetically and nurtured culturally to fix the problem. So if you let your husband off the hook and tell him at the beginning of a conversation, you know what? All I need you to do right now is listen, not come up with a solution. That can be a huge gift to your guy and really start the beginning of a enriching and productive communication about perimenopause and moving forward through this journey together. Hey, friend. Can I call you friend? Because I already feel like we're friends in my head. Did this podcast teach you something, make you laugh, or feel less like an alien? If so, I would be so incredibly grateful if you could take just 60 seconds to rate, review, and subscribe. That is the number one way you can thank me and support the show. Until next week, stay cool and keep away from sharp objects.